Hi, everyone, and welcome to the show. My guest today is Stephen Spling Asperling. He's a South African movie critic whose work is essential for any film enthusiast. His latest book, The Essence of Dreams, an anthology of film reviews, focuses on cinema's ability to create immersive worlds and transports us, making the experience feel like living vicariously through someone else's dream. Spling, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Tim. Really great to be here.
Great to have you on the show. How did you come up with this idea of writing this book?
I think I have always had the idea of writing a book on my bucket list, and I've got a bucket list that's up in the air somewhere. It's not really a list, pretty much like my movie bucket list, which I think this book is really for a lot of people. It could be that. And in terms of the genesis of writing this book, it's been a book of 17 years in the making. And the reason I say that is because I didn't know I was going to be writing a book 17 years ago when I started reviewing films. But the idea came to me when I realized just how much work I'd covered in those 17 years and decided that I would put it to good use and try and share some of the pearls that I've gathered over this time.
And I see that every review that you've done in the book is also accompanied by a sketch. Can you tell me more about the illustration?
Yeah. So when you are approaching a book, you obviously need to think about things like images and licenses and all of that jazz. And I thought to myself, like, what is going to be the easiest thing to do here? Because I could approach the studios and try and get permission for posters and all of that sort of thing. And then I thought to myself, what would be more personal is if I actually sketched everything in the book. And I decided to go that route and even got one of these sketching tablet things to do that. And then realized that I may have bitten off more than I could chew, because to get 97 illustrations to accompany the book is no small feat. And I also realized that even though I did art at school and I did quite well, my sketches were not quite coming off as well as I would have liked. They were a little bit scary, a little bit nightmarish. And I just thought I needed to get an illustrator whose work was a little bit more agreeable, a little bit more surreal, but not on the nightmarish side. And because it's the essence of dreams, I wanted to keep it in the dream world rather than the nightmare world. And I approached my staff writer named Alan Lamprecht. And I was actually wanting to give him more work. And I was saying to myself, like, what else can you do, Alan? I was saying to him. And he showed me that he does these doodles. And I was very impressed. And that's when I pitched the idea of him doing the illustrations. And he went full steam ahead. And I am so pleased with the result.
Yeah, it's interesting how for each film review, you have the sketch, because that individual sketch encompasses the movie. So for example, I'm looking at your book now and I'm looking at the review for 127 Hours. And of course, I've heard of this film, but I haven't seen it. But just looking at the sketch of the chap that is, I guess you could say, stuck between the boulder, it makes me want to see the film. So it's a great way for folks to get the feeling of the film and go and watch it. Because I guess that's the idea behind the book, is to encourage folks to go and watch films that they haven't seen.
Yeah, it's to basically serve as a book that could be on your TV room table or your bedside table. And you could just look through it, page through it, and go like, all of these films have been rated an 8 out of 10 or higher by Spling. So in my mind, all of them are worth seeking and watching. And if you're not quite sure what to watch, which is a classic story these days with so many things and so little that we feel that is really on the table, especially with these streamers, it's one of those situations where you can actually get a sense for the film based on the illustration. And in the case of 127 Hours, that is inspired by the poster. So the essence of dreams, also trying to capture the essence of the films that we are talking about with these illustrations. They're the kind of sketches that you could see on a wall, and they're not perfectly proportioned. They are interesting. They're not fully formed in terms of, there's just sometimes an abstract quality to them that you need to fill in the gaps a little bit. And I just love the simplicity of them and how these things blend into the actual reviews themselves. And I actually wanted to have them more integrated into the text itself, but I think it just keeps it from being too much of a wall of text, and it breaks up the book a little bit. There's some nice white spacing here and there just to give the eye a little bit of a break, but really love what Alan did with these illustrations.
Yeah, it must have been an interesting process for you, considering that you've seen so many films over the last few decades. And if I understand correctly, all of the reviews in this book are from the year 2000 onwards. And as you mentioned, they're all 8 out of 10 and above. So tell me more about how you selected these films, because I'm sure you had quite a lot to go through.
Yeah, it's 17 years of movie watching is what informed the book. And that is why most of the reviews fall within that sort of frame. And it's basically whatever inspired me to review a film, whether that be for a press screening or if I picked up something that I found in the video store. Like I think I've got The Truman Show, which doesn't quite fit within that parameter, which is featured. But it's any film that has really transported me, that has been so immersive that you finish the film and you feel like you have to reacclimatize yourself to the real world. Obviously, the darkness in the cinema is already something working for you. But when you feel like you've actually been in that world, that's the kind of films that I'm trying to relay. And that's why I describe it as the essence of dreams, because each of these films in my mind is a very full and complete dream. It's like you are living in the director's world for a while. And that's what I love about film, is that illusion. All those artistic elements are coming together to create this grand illusion, this way to escape from wherever you are and enter this different world. And when that's done accurately and that's done consistently and reaches the full potential of the vision, then that's when you end up with a film that's going to score high, like an 8 out of 10 or higher.
So the director of the film plays a really big role in creating that world, because as you watch the film, you're living vicariously through someone else's dream. So how do you see the director in terms of the role that they play in sharing that dream with the viewer?
It's a little bit like Inception, which is one of the films that is featured in this book, arguably the greatest heist film ever made. And in Inception, they treat the characters almost like a film. You've got Leonardo DiCaprio, who's the director. And in a similar way, he is like an architect, which is one of the other characters. But they all kind of share, and that's the whole thing with filmmaking. It's very much a team sport. And they are all sharing in this vision. And obviously, the director is the one that sort of calls the shots and is the one that's solving the problems on the day and is ensuring that the script and the treatment stays as clear and as aligned to that vision as possible. So for me, the director is the one whose eyes we see things through. And obviously, it's a team effort, so there is a whole lot of people behind that effort to do that. But when you see an auteur's work like Denis Villeneuve, who is featured, I think, a couple of times with Enemy and Arrival, then you can see what I'm talking about. It's a very unified signature thing that's happening. And when a director really has that overarching influence over a film, then it very much becomes a personal thing. It becomes like a dream. And obviously he's done Dune, which is based on Frank Herbert's book, which is a little bit more widespread in terms of it not being his own work, but he really makes it his own. And you can see that sort of signature flair and very Denis Villeneuve thing coming through in all of his films. So yeah, the director, if they are very much aware of the vision they're trying to translate to screen, are there every step of the way and ensure the quality every step of the way.
Yeah, you mentioned Arrival. That was an incredible film, certainly unforgettable for me. I was wondering, are there a handful of movies that for you are unforgettable? In other words, your top tier films in the book?
In terms of the book, yes, I would probably say that the films that I've scored a 9 are the real top tier ones. And I could just go through that and tell you which ones they are. In terms of my personal favorite films of all time, I would have to say, and these are not necessarily included in the book because they range across the ages, but for me, it's been in ascending order. I would have to say it's Excalibur, which is a John Boorman film. He wanted to do Lord of the Rings, but realized that the visual effects weren't up to scratch at the time, and obviously a massive budget and undertaking to do that. So he switched to Arthurian legend and went with the story of King Arthur. And it's just such an iconic and beautiful film. It's dated, but there's that sort of timelessness that comes through it, as well as with Carl Orff's O Fortuna theme, which echoes throughout. And it's one of those films that you can't really forget. It's just so powerfully visual. And Patrick Stewart, Helen Mirren, Liam Neeson are just a few of the names in that film that you forget that they were actually in it. And then another film that I really, truly appreciate is Chinatown with Jack Nicholson and Faye Dunaway. It's a Polanski film. And I just really appreciate the detail and the nuance to this film that's swathed in mystery and intrigue. And at 2.5 hours, you are just captivated by what's happening, from this drought situation to this private investigator's investigation going into a woman that's apparently having an affair. And it just is so clever, from the little things where he is using his detective skills all the way through to this massive story of intrigue. And then I really love Billy Wilder's Sunset Boulevard, which is the film that I think inspired David Lynch's career, about old Hollywood versus new Hollywood. And the glitz and glamour and the sort of black and white thing there, but the unreal versus the real, all kind of playing off against each other, creating this interesting tension. And it's just so surreal and beautiful, and a black and white film from Billy Wilder. And then right at the top, it's a strange one for a lot of people, but Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which is like a sketch comedy, which doesn't really have an ending, but is just so hilarious and rewatchable and brilliant in its own way.
Wow. I'll certainly be looking up some of those films. Now, in your book, you noted that Everything Everywhere All at Once dials back to its human essence. So for you, what is the single most important essential truth that a film must communicate to be truly successful and worthy of an 8 out of 10 or higher on the Splingometer?
I think what most of the successful films do is they manage to resonate with audiences, and on a human level, where universal themes are really timeless. And that's why some of the old classics still hit home today, because they weren't centered on technology. They weren't centered on very specific things to their time. They are actually grappling with the struggles that we have as humans, whether it be a couple of centuries ago or today. They are really just tapping into something that is just so much more bigger than all of us, and the sort of specificity of a year or a moment in time. And they are able to capture the realness of it with a sense of honesty. And they're also able to speak to people on a level that you can't help but connect with. So I think those are the elements that really come together to actually make a film go from good to great.
Yeah, and over the years, you've been involved in so many aspects of the film industry, from radio broadcasting, consultancy, judging, podcasting, serving as a panelist, a juror, and a host. So given your work in various aspects of the industry, including your website, reviewmyscript.com, how does understanding a screenplay structure affect your ability to review the final film?
That's a great question, Tim. I think that when you are so close to film like I am, that you are inevitably going to be thinking about some of the aspects to the direction, to the cinematography, to the performances, to the script writing. Those elements are all present and they're all at the back of your mind. But I try to go in, when I review a film, as an end user, I try to forget all of those things. I try to let it wash over me. I try to let it enchant me, rather than trying to dissect it or analyze it. I think when I start to analyze and start to notice the various components of a film, that's when I realize that it's not a good film. Because if it's distracting you enough to start drawing you out of that dream space, then it's not doing its job well enough. The same can be said for a soundtrack or CG. It's whenever something is distracting you and it's not elegant enough to actually continue the flow of that story or the flow of that visualization, that it suddenly becomes a problem. So it's when things stick out that you become taken out of that dream. You become alienated in a way. That's why bad CGI is terrible, and distracting soundtracks and over-the-top performances can really ruin a film because it reminds you watching a film. And unless it's a breaking the fourth wall moment, a mockumentary or a comedy where they encourage you to do that, it's totally against the flow. And a storytelling flow and flow in terms of consistency and performances and maintaining that world is critical. Yeah, that's the short answer.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm sure you've probably seen some films where it starts out very well and then by the second half you're a bit frustrated because it could have been something else. It could have been better. And then I guess that's when your screenwriting skills come into it because you think I could have maybe done a different job. But with so many people working on a film, the end product is a bit difficult to know how it's going to turn out until right at the end, huh?
Yeah, there's a perfect example. I was at the Stockholm International Film Festival recently, and one of the films that was screened there, I'm not going to mention its name, but it did something like that where it became incredibly distracting because halfway through the film, the lead actor basically changes from one actor to another. And in a similar way to the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, where Heath Ledger passed during the making of the film and they ended up substituting him for one or two other actors. Something like that happened, but it was more in a sort of Fight Club way where they were trying to just do this handover from one character to the next. And unfortunately, it just, as ambitious as it is, it doesn't quite work. It's a bit confusing to begin with. And because the level of acting changes from the one actor to the other, it became something that you weren't really on board with. And because you didn't feel like they'd done this in an elegant enough way, it really changes the dynamic of the entire film. You are like totally invested in it. And then they do this little switcheroo. And then you're confused because you're like, why did they do that? It was going so well. And having this other actor suddenly like taking the place of the other one is so confusing because all the other actors in the cast are acting as though there's nothing that's changed. And because they didn't communicate it well enough, it suddenly just throws the film. So if you were thinking it was great up to that point, it really hinges so devastatingly on this switcheroo thing that they do. And I don't think they did it well enough to actually to make it a smooth transition. And because it's so disruptive, it really is a film that becomes divisive, going for something quite wild in a Fight Club kind of way, but not really landing it.
It's great that you're able to see films around the world and go to different film festivals like the one you mentioned in Stockholm. Now, your book includes reviews of South African films like District 9 and Tourbus. How do local stories and regional dreamscapes achieve the same universal transport of power that you celebrate in global cinema?
With South African film, I think one of the biggest issues affecting us is the budget. And we make pretty amazing films on next to nothing in terms of that comparison on a global level. We don't really have the luxury of time when it comes to filmmaking. So with actors and writers, in terms of drafts, the screenplay doesn't have enough development budget to really take it through the amount of drafts and rewrites that it really needs to have in order to become amazing. Sometimes you get one-hit wonders where, you know, it gets done in two or three drafts, but that is a rarity. So on the front end of the production, we don't have that much time to do that. And then in terms of performances with actors, they don't really have that much time to sink into their characters. And there's often not that much time to rehearse. So we are like on the fly when it comes to filmmaking. And so when you have a great South African film, it really is even much more of a miracle than having a great film from one of these sort of more established filmmaking destinations. And in terms of South Africa, I think what really helps is when a film is working brilliantly when it comes to story and character. Like, this is advice for anyone, because you can have a very low budget film and have it still work on the basis of just getting the character and story, because that's what really connects with an audience. Even if it's not as visually spectacular or beautiful in terms of its oral landscape, you are able to do so much with so little to begin with. That's why the screenwriting process is so important. And that's why I keep wanting to help screenwriters get to the full terms of their vision and reach the full potential of that vision, because you can do so much with one person and writing a script. So yeah, I think I've diverged a little bit from your question. But in terms of South African films that have landed their way in the Essence of Dreams, they are the films that really took it up a notch and have done enough to succeed on an international level. And an example of Tourbos, which is a film I actually did some work on, the screenplay was really just an opportunity for a film a little bit like My Fair Lady, but The Grapes of Wrath, to try and do something much grander than we are used to seeing on screens. It's a period piece drama with some really excellent performances, and Renee van Rooyen did such a wonderful job in directing this. I really hope that she will be able to do more of these kind of films. But what elevated that film in such a big way was the soundtrack. And it's got such a lush soundtrack. What people don't realize is that sound is almost like 50%. I know the percentage kind of varies depending on who you speak to. But without great sound, you quickly realize just how average a film comes across. So when you are completely immersed in these films, it's often because of the sound. And they're like 8 to 11 different layers of sound that get catered for in the biggest budget films. And when that's missing, it really de-escalates the experience because it doesn't feel as real or as lush.
Yeah, it's amazing that as a South African film critic, you have so much experience across the various aspects of the industry. You even founded the Film Critics Association of South Africa, or should I say you were a founder of FCASA. So what do you think is the most significant change you hope to see in the South African film landscape over the next 5 years, or even in the film critic landscape in South Africa?
I think that one of the biggest things for us as a filmmaking destination is we've got everything that a film would need. We've got amazing crews, we've got brilliant locations. I think there's a little bit of an issue at the moment with the incentive around being here rather than going to another destination to create a film. And then I think we also get a bit swamped in terms of studios being booked out by one production, which sort of hampers things a little bit in terms of the growth. But from what I understand, there's another studio that's going to be built, and hopefully that will open things up even more. In terms of our industry, I think what we might be struggling with at the moment is funding, which we've always struggled with, even more so these days, where filmmakers are just trying to scramble to get the financing together to make that possible. And there are lots of different ways you can improve the local industry. Like in France, they've got a percentage of each movie ticket sold goes back into the industry. And I think something like that would really work well. But then the problem is that when you've got organs of government that are meant to be supporting the industry and are trying to find their own feet, then everything destabilizes. So I think certainty in terms of funding would be the biggest thing that's really affecting us at the moment. Because if you can't be guaranteed that you'll be able to pay your actors, crew, and everyone's struggling to get by, then you are just going to be scrambling the whole time and things are going to be self-imploding, because without that consistency and reliability, shortcuts get taken, and then that affects the ultimate quality of the film. And sometimes people get to a point where the film is basically made, but because the post-production isn't quite there, the net result is a little bit average and doesn't quite hit the mark as much as it would. And beyond that, when it comes to distribution and marketing, a lot of people think that just making the film is the step, but they forget that they actually need to disseminate that film and get it across to audiences. And how do you do that effectively? So it's all about structure and platform in my mind, in terms of funding, in terms of execution, and in terms of reaching the intended audience. And I think globally, we've come to a situation where it just seems as though the formula is being rewritten at the moment, because everything's in a bit of a state of flux. You can blame AI, you can blame streamers for disrupting the market, but we're just trying to wait for the dust to settle. And I think now is a brilliant time for people that are very entrepreneurial and very creative to take the reins and try and find a way for their product to exist and find an audience for it as well.
You're certainly a creative yourself, and the new book, The Essence of Dreams, it's been out for a few months now. When was the official release date?
That's a good question. I think I had a screening, which I would consider the official release that tied in with the book launch. at the Labia. It was last year, I think it was around August. So it has been out for a while now. But it's one of those books that I'm going to just keep talking about because the films in it are films that I consider timeless that'll still have value in 100 years. And I think that maybe a good idea for me would be to include more recent films as I go along. So maybe I need to re-release it every couple of years with expanded entries.
Sounds good. If you want to pick up a copy, you can visit Amazon.com or Spling's website, splingmovies.com. Stephen, great to have you on the show today, and I look forward to catching a film with you again soon.
Thanks, Tim. It's been wonderful. Really appreciate it.